You ever feel like the civilian world just doesn't get it? You step out of uniform and expect clarity, purpose, even peace. But instead, you're hit with confusion, frustration, and that sinking, now what feeling. Maybe you thought getting out meant everything would finally fall into place. A job you love, a home that feels right, peace in your own damn head. But here's the truth. Things don't always come issued like that at discharge. And when the mission disappears, a lot of vets feel lost trying to build a new one. Today's episode is the fix to all of that. We're sitting down with Mr. Whiskey, a Navy vet who faced one of the most brutal command climates imaginable, rampant suicides, broken leadership, zero morale. He made it out, and now he's using his voice, humor, and hard-won wisdom to help others find a new path forward. We get real about purpose after service, military dark humor, leadership failures, and why getting out isn't the cure-all you may have been hoping it would be. But before we dive in, make sure you're subscribed to the email newsletter at driveonpodcast.com/subscribe. You'll get my five favorite episodes sent straight to your inbox. No fluff, just the best insights to help you drive on. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support the mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now, let's get into today's episode. Mr. Whiskey, man, welcome back. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. You know, I was on your show back, gosh, 6-7 months ago, and you know, that was a great time, and looking forward to the conversation with you today.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to be here. I wore my dark green to be thematic with the whole military theme and the drive-on logo, so we're here. We're ready.
Excellent, excellent. So for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you, your background and everything, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a Navy veteran, but, you know, tell us a little bit about your military background and kind of, you know, what got you to where you are today.
For sure. You know, I'm a nuclear operator, so not the most common job, you know, not the most common title, but I did have a very unique military experience. To begin with, the nuclear program is one of the highest stress and suicide rates. When I was there at that time, it was about 1 to 3 suicides a month, and that's a lot in my book. One is too many. So to have 1 to 3 each month, flag always at half mast, the command saying, "Hey, we're doing steak and lobster because to raise morale," you know, that kind of stuff. And then the ship I got sent to, you know, I am a man of God, and maybe it was all lined up because not only was I at one of the most high suicide rates base, my ship, the CVN-73 USS George Washington, was in the news and under investigation for a mass suicide epidemic described as, you know, we had 3 in a single week. And this was prior to my arrival, 3 in a single week, you know, all different ranks and all that. And then by the time I left, we had about 15, the last one being a man murdered his wife, military on military. So you can imagine that my experience has been very unique. The kind of each base has its own command climate, as you're well aware, sure. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes very bad. And, you know, I give some grace to some of the leadership for what they had to deal with. Obviously, the new leaders who came into that, it's like an operation salvage almost. And for the leaders that were there that kind of made things worse, whether intentionally or unintentionally, you know, there's definitely, I saw a lot that could have been done different. And recently I've learned that I'm not a military man. I'm a man who was in the military. You know, there is a big difference. And sure. I think a lot of us are men who happen to be in the military. And I don't know, the military man mindset is different, you know. And for me personally, I saw myself and my potential much greater outside of the military for what I wanted to do. In the military, there's always so much red tape and leadership. And it's good to not have constant change, right? We want a strong structure and organization to protect this country. But some of the stuff that just, there's always people above you and your impact is limited to such a small bubble in the military. And I felt like civilian side, there would be more ability to cause change, whether to the military, in tandem with the military, or just to other groups, including veterans.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's certainly a great reason to get out of the military. You've seen greater potential outside of the military. And I like how you described it as, you know, the military man versus a man who was in the military. As you were saying that, I was thinking back to the TV show back in, gosh, I don't even know, the 80s or 90s or so, like Major Dad, I think it was, where like, he was a military man. Like he, like that was his thing. Like
sometimes you can look and just know, you know, like they hold themselves out of a, they like stand at attention just to rest.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
How would you describe yourself, Mr. DeLuzio? I got to know, are you a man who was in the military, a military man, or both? Did you slowly become one or the other?
You know, I think I was a man in the military, and the military like kind of followed me out. As I left the military, right. I kind of kept some of it with me. So it's not that I'm necessarily a military man, as we're describing it here. I think I am more of a man who was in the military who's kept a piece of that past part of
me. It's not even your choice, because the other, this is so funny. I caught myself the other day. I was taking the public transport in Chicago for a speaking engagement, and a man had told me, like, when you get off the blue line train, you got to go upstairs for the green line. And then I got totally lost because he didn't tell me I also had to go across the street and back down. And then I was describing to this woman who was a worker, I was lost. And I was like, you don't understand. Told me, take the blue line, head top side, go green. And I was like, no way. I just said head top side about taking the subway. I was like, this is the Navy just suddenly popped out of my mouth. Like,
right,
I'm heading top side. Like I have civilian friends who are like, what? I'll say I'm going to the head and they're like, huh? I'm like, I don't know why I call it that. It's a restroom. I haven't called it. I don't know. Right. It comes out. I think the vernacular and that stuff, I'm sure you have like certain phrases, like, and people get mad because I'm like, I'll see you at 0100. And they're like, it's 1 a.m. It's 1 a.m. Yeah, right. Stop with this military time. Like it's easier. All right. There's no repeats. There's no confusion. 1800 is 1800, 6 o'clock is 0600, you know, but hey.
Yeah, I actually had a problem with that. This is after I got out of the military. I set my alarm on my phone for 6 o'clock to wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, and I screwed up. I set it for 6 p.m. Ever since then, I switched my phone. It's on military time, 24-hour time. Yeah, like, I am never going back to that because I even on my computer, on my phone, everything, I keep it that way because I screwed it up once. I don't want to do it again. So I just try to make a, you know, error proofing, dummy proof it, if you will, you know, so I can't make that mistake again. But so I want to talk a little bit more about your experiences, kind of the stuff that you're into now. So I mentioned your show that you had me on a while back, Couple of Nukes.
Sir.
Great time on that show. Definitely for the listeners, go check out that show. But you know, focuses on having these conversations and, you know, focuses on self-improvement and, you know, that type of thing. What kind of got you into that? What sparked you to get into that and create this platform? And, you know, what was your goal starting it all?
Yeah. So it's funny how like we plan one thing and then life and God will send us a totally different way. You know, I wanted to do a comedy show because, you know, the nuclear community, like I said, they always say, I don't know how true this is, you know, don't fact check me. But they say, the recruiters, they say that about only 5% of people can join the military, right? They always get that spear of like, you know, you're the best of the best because between the physical waivers and drug waivers and the HAZMAT, only 5% can join. Then they tell nuclear operators of that 5%, only 1% can be a nukes, you know? So you're like 1% of 5% of America, right? It's a lot of nukes have these inflated egos. And because they're so smart, their brains just function differently. You know, they just think differently. We have a term called nuking it out, which is overthinking or arguing very technical, minimal points. And so we were sitting around having a very interesting academic yet comedic conversation. I was like, look at this, a couple of nukes. Oh, there it is. You know, that's how it happened. Even though my show really is just a nuke, as I jokingly call it sometimes, that's me, because no other nukes were in on it. You know, nukes are like very unenthusiastic people and they're tired and they're alcoholics and they hate life. And so no one wanted to do a podcast, you know, but I was like, no, like we'll highlight nuking it out and then we'll also nuke out life and we'll, you know, talk about the mental health struggles. Like, I wanted a balance of, we give life advice, but we have a good time. And when I was recently in Chicago, recently as in April, you know, speaking about, I was talking about integrating comedy to address dark subject matters such as medical ailments and suicide. And one of the talking points I had was about the military is known for dark humor, for morbid humor that sometimes civilians don't get, or like people are like, are you okay? Do you need to see someone or talk to someone? You know, because like it was a lot of, you know, every time I walked across the shipyard, you know, I had so many sailors like, be so funny if that, you know, high beam just fell on my head right now, you know, like stuff like that. Or, you know, so I talked about how even like military and humor play a role together. And, you know, no nukes were in on it. And so when I got out, I especially lost the connection to that community. And there are meme pages and Facebook groups and all that for like nukes only, reactor only. But, you know, I didn't want to spend all this time trying to hunt down and find nuclear partners. I said, you know what? Why be so niche? You know, every podcaster will say, be niche. Your show shouldn't be for everyone because then it's for no one. I don't believe in that. I believe that, you know, your show is going to reach the right people at the right time. I truly believe that. And so I said, let's do military mental health. But that put me into this category of Mr. Whiskey is a military man and he only works with military people. And I can't guest on his show because I've never been in the military. And, you know, that's not what it was about. Like, you don't need to be in the military to help people in the military, right?
That's right.
Just like pastors who go and preach at prisons. I mean, some of them are former prisoners, sure, but not all of them. Not every addictions counselor has been an addict, right?
They don't have to go rob a bank just to go be able to talk to people in prison, you know?
Right. That's what I'm saying. And so, yes, does it help to have that mindset? But there's also stuff, a lot of overlaps between the civilian and military world. We're people too, right? Our lifestyle and our job are intertwined, but we still face divorce. We still face, you know, grief and loss of family members and loved ones. We still face, you know, sure, we may have a higher rate of addiction, but a civilian struggle with addiction. There's people overdose. Almost 1 in 7 people know someone who has taken their life or overdose. So you don't need to give me life advice just because you've been through it. You know, like at the end of the day, if anything, sometimes it's kind of off-putting, like, you think you can talk to me because you were in the military too, so therefore you know what I've been through. Like, I want a person to speak to me as a person, not as like soldier to soldier sometimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I've done the same thing on this show. Is I've had plenty of people who were civilians who had some sort of expertise. Maybe they're, you know, a psychologist or a doctor, some other, you know, trade maybe that they may do, or maybe they run a nonprofit because they're just extremely grateful for the service that servicemen and women provide to the country, and they run a nonprofit to help those folks. Maybe they never put the uniform on, but so what? They're providing a resource that is there for those people who might need that type of resource. So
That's why we have the MFLAC and stuff like that, because sometimes we need a separation from the military because we also have this distrust and dislike of the military.
That's right.
Sometimes we don't want to tell our problems to the military, you know?
Yeah, and look at just the attitude that a lot of veterans have towards the VA, you know, right or wrong. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now, but, you know, people just have a very big distrust of the VA, of the military. And so maybe if you need some help, the only other option is a non-military option, non-military connected option. So yeah, check out some of those civilian resources or nonprofits or other organizations that are out there that can provide you with the benefits that you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure. I totally agree with that. Like I said, and from there, I kind of was like, you know what? I need to like, I'm not just a military guy. I even like rebranded my show logo. It was a nuclear explosion with me and my dog sticking our tongues out. We were like, woo, nuking out life. And everyone thought I blew stuff up. So they thought like we were just talking about nuclear warfare. And I was like, oh, okay. Branding change. And so now it's a neat and professional photo of my dog. She's sitting up, you know, toward the sky, like ready to embark on this life quest. And, you know, I still have a huge focus for veterans and military, of course, because it's, I mean, as we said, only 5% qualify, yet it's a huge portion of the population. I mean, everywhere I go, there's a veteran or active duty member, you know, and they need our help just as much. Like I said, they deal with the same stuff. And so I don't want to be restricted to just military, but at the same time, I don't ever want military members to feel like my show is not for them as well. You know, it's for everyone. And I have it even on my website, I have it broken down. If you want to go to just military only episodes or guests, I have it organized like that by branch. If you want to go just to Vietnam War stories, you can. If you want just Air Force or Army, get to have Coast Guard on. So Coast Guard, hit me up, but and Space Force, you know, but you know, if you want to do that, that's for you. But hey, if you want to go look at careers or finances or specifically VA home loans or specifically women's health or men's mental health, like, you know, it is for everyone. And you can, that's the goal with the show, is that anyone can go and find something they need. I've done flying airplanes to sleeping better. Like, everyone has different, we're at different points in our lives. You know, some people need relationship advice, some don't. But some people who are good at relationships are bad at money. So usually they work in tandem, I guess. But
I was going to say, and that's usually, if they're not good with money, they're going to end up not being good in relationships too.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a wide variety of topics. And I face the same struggle myself with this show. Sometimes I feel like it's all over the place. Sometimes I feel like I just got to narrow in and focus on a couple, you know, key topics that are really heavy hitters that'll drive the most impact. But at the same time, you know, you never know what somebody might be going through. And and if they stumble across that episode, that might be the thing that just turns that light bulb on in their head. It's like, oh man, I need to make that change, or, you know, use whatever that resource is, or get that help or whatever. And so, you know, at times it's like, I kind of want to put out all those different types of episodes, because
exactly,
you know,
you
want to help everybody. You know, I started the show thinking to myself, and I'm sure you're probably the same way, so if I can help one person, then it's a job well done, right? And then years later, you're still doing it, and it's like, okay, well, I've helped one person, so who's that next person? And so you want to just keep going and make sure
that never ending.
You don't miss anybody either. So, you know, so there's a lot of resources. You know, we talked about all sorts of things like that, but you'd also introduce comedy into, you know, you're talking about, you know, just everybody kind of joking around and the dark sense of humor that a lot of military has. I completely understand what you're talking about. I'm sure a lot of the veteran listeners on the show for this episode is probably just nodding their head like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm trying to maybe just get your opinion on this. Why do you think it is that we're into the dark humor and the rest of the population is like, man, something's wrong with this guy?
You know what? That's a very interesting question, because I don't know, because the only other population I found that dark humor really works with is more of like young emo women or gothic women who are also usually suicidal. They, you know, not to stereotype or label them, but I mean, if you look at the statistics, so it's like, I wonder if it's that like the emotional detachment piece is necessary to understand and enjoy that humor. Because I met plenty of people who are just like, that's not funny. Like, why would you joke about that? But we have some kind of emotional detachment, and that's not to say we're lifeless, but I think, I don't know, you know, it's like, do any of us truly wish we would get hit by a bus walking to the shipyard? Not, hopefully not, but do we laugh and say, you know, we could get a pretty good amount of disability if we break enough bones? Yeah, but it's like, I think it's necessary, because like morale is so hard. I, as much as I bash on leadership, you know, being a leader in certain fields and looking at the way the military is set up, morale has to be so difficult to maintain, because like I mentioned, to bring it back earlier, you only have so much control as a leader, and you can try and do what you need to do, but the mission needs to get done. Sometimes big Navy or big Army or whoever it is, Uncle Sam is putting down deadlines that you have to meet. And sometimes almost every time that I've ever seen, you're understaffed, overworked. You know, and so it's hard to maintain morale. And you and I, in an episode of my show, we actually talked about how there's this mindset in the military that men get that, like, everything is just stupid or gay or weird to like actually attend command events or to use the what is it, MWR, and go on the trips and stuff, and how that, like, everything a lot of the commands try to do to boost morale, people are just like, forget this, I'd rather go home and drink. And it's like, how effective is drinking at raising morale compared to, you know, actually, if you actually have fun with your command when you can have fun? And then there's some people who want to continue the beatings until morale improves. But, you know, there's that mindset too. But I think it's like, so I think working in that humor, whether dark humor or, and one of the things I miss about the military, which only get when I'm with veterans is inside jokes that, like, military only jokes. You know, there's certain jokes that I'm like, my civilian friends just wouldn't get, you know, especially when it comes to certain words and vernacular, like talking about certain watch duties or certain phrases or acronyms. We know the military loves acronyms. And, right. You know, so whether it's those inside jokes or the dark humor, I think it's just trying to get any little boost of morale that you can. And I think if you put restrictions of like morality or emotional attachment to it, then you're going to lose a large percentage of the humor from the military, and you drop that, and now morale's already dropped lower than it was. So that's what I think it was. You know, I think civilians have a lot more leisure time to care and a lot more emotional availability to like overthink and care about that stuff. Whereas in the military, it's like, screw it. We're making that joke. Who cares? My life already sucks because, you know, I'm away from my loved ones. I'm working long hours. I'm underpaid. I'm stressed. I'm you know, I don't like where my life is going. And that's not to, and I'm making it sound like the military is miserable. There is a time and place for it. I mean, it just depends. Like I said, yeah. Your chain of command can make or break it. You know, the people you work with and your own decisions too. And again, not, there's a lot of control on you, but there's also a lot, like we said, that is in your hands. How will you utilize anything that can boost morale, whether that's your own free time or the command's time?
Yeah, and to your point that you were talking about earlier, the leadership, they have a lot of people that they have to take into consideration.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody's going to like every decision. Some people are going to be on board. Some people are going to be like, I don't know if that's the right decision. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. That's their job. They have to go follow those orders and do what the leadership is telling them to do. And so it's got to be a difficult thing for a leader to be able to, you know, kind of please everybody. And if you try to please everybody,
you're
probably not going to please anybody. And so that it's going to end up just being a, you know, a never ending cycle. And then the leader's going to be frustrated, and that's not going to work out well either. So, you know, so that's a difficult job in and of itself. But then, you know, you look at that dark humor side of things and where that comes in. And from my perspective, I think it's that kind of emotional detachment that you're talking about. I think that's the key to it all, because, you know, I know when I was in Afghanistan, we joke all the time. It's like, hey, watch your step. You know, like, we do like one of those kind of things.
Yeah, I found that funny, but I know people were like, that's awful.
Yeah, exactly. And we'd laugh about
that's
it.
Too funny.
You know, like even if you're the guy who was, you know, supposedly going to, you know, blow up or whatever, but like we would laugh about it because you kind of have to. You kind of have to like detach yourself from like the how severe the consequences of this thing is, so that you can focus on everything. Because, I mean, if it was me and I'm constantly worried about blowing up or getting shot or whatever, I'm gonna be petrified. I'm not gonna be paying attention to anything other than like every little detail around me, like constantly laser focus on all those little tiny things. And then I'm going to miss a big picture, and I'm going to end up missing, you know, the sniper that's, you know, in the window on the other side of the, you know, the road or whatever. And so those types of things, you have to be able to kind of separate the different scenarios. You know,
and even like, you know, if I actually stepped on a landmine and got blown up and lost a leg, you know what my buddies would say? We told you to watch your step. And I would have been like, I guess I didn't watch my step. I would have been like, oh, this is why I don't play Twister. You know, like that's even after the fact, because like you said, we can just focus and get into this negative mindset, but I think it's important to do. And, you know, one thing too, that's frustrating is if as a leader, you keep trying to boost morale and nothing's working, if you ever stop, then you're held accountable and they're saying you're the reason there's no morale, you're failing your soldiers and sailors. And it's like, you can't win.
Yeah. And to your point too, you said earlier, you know, a lot of people just rather go home and drink, and like that's not really the best option. You know, yeah, sure, maybe the group outing or whatever it is that you know leadership has planned might not be, you know, the
exact, it's not the best barbecue you've ever been to. That's
it's not the exact thing that you might want to be doing with your Saturday or whatever. But if you do, I don't know, you're with a bunch of people, you know, friends that you're with, and you're hanging out, and you can laugh and have a good time and kind of let your guard down. You're not like on duty necessarily. You can just kind of be you and be you around those people. And who knows, you might actually have a good time, right?
So, it's the bandwagon mentality. Like I said, of people get this mindset. All it takes is one guy to start making fun of people. Be like, are you really going to command ball?
Yeah. Right.
Just come have fireball with me, you know? And then it's such a bandwagon mentality, honestly. Same with, I think part of the reason the dark humor does so well is because like you said, everyone is in on it, you know? So same in an opposite way. It's where if everyone, like, morale is, and this is just positivity in general. It is so much harder to build up momentum and spread for that than it is negativity. Yeah. I believe, what I love is in Proverbs, I believe it talks about, I'm going to give a terrible paraphrase of this, but it's like a little bit of, I don't think it's poison, but it's like a little bit of something gross in a vat of wine will ruin the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like just any negativity will spread so fast and just ruin everything. Right. Whereas you could, if you put a drop of wine in a bit of poison, it's not going to make it taste better. You know, you need so much of it. So it's like the dilution scale for positivity to negativity is just so against us, especially in the military. And, you know, it's also on the leadership to like make sure that when those events happen, that you're not like stand attention and salute me. Like you got to make it like if you're off, you're off.
Yeah.
You know, and right. some people can't take off the uniform. Some people can't relax for just a little bit. And so it's also on the leadership. Make sure that like if you're not having a good time or you're not out of the uniform, the people below you aren't going to be.
Right.
They're not going to feel like they can be, and then they're going to hate it.
Yeah, because then that just feels like another day at work. And I mean, is that really what the intention of this is supposed to be, right? So
No. So
that's a good point, I think, for the leaders who might be out there listening to this is, you know, keep that in mind. Like don't make it another day at work for your guys or gals, whatever you have under you. But like don't do that because that defeats the whole purpose and you might as well just not do the whole event to begin with, right? So yeah, exactly.
You
know, I'd rather have that than another day of work. So, you know, and I know, like, you know, getting out of the military, a lot of times, I'm sure you've noticed this through conversations that you've had and maybe even yourself, but, you know, a lot of times veterans struggle with the loss of mission or purpose after getting out of the military. And so it becomes like a new mission when you get out to find maybe a new role or career path or something like that, right? Have you kind of experienced that through your show and
people
that you've talked with?
I love this topic. It's funny. On my way to the airport from Chicago, my Uber driver got into this conversation with me. I'm sorry, Lyft. I don't want to promote the wrong brand. Lyft took me. I paid $80. But we were talking about it and about how, you know, the longer you're in, definitely the worse it is. But I was telling him how even just like a few years, mm-hmm. especially when you went straight from high school, that's all you know, right?
Yeah, right.
And what's really sad, and come May 9th, it'll be my 2-year anniversary of leaving the service. And, you know, I found out, especially last year, my 1-year anniversary, like a lot of thoughts that day, because that 1 year felt like yesterday and it felt like 1 year. It felt like a couple of years. It was such a strange period of my life. And with that coming up, I've been doing a lot of reflecting. And I think for me personally, I happened to fall into the podcasting and find a new mission pretty quickly that had a lot of purpose and meaning and a lot of impact. But I'll give an example. One of my best friends called me not too long ago saying, Mr. Whiskey, I'm going to reenlist or I'm going to go back in. He just spent 6 years talking about how he's so excited to get out of military. A few months later, calls me saying, maybe I'll go reserve. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe it's not like the real military. Maybe they're not lying to us. And I said, hey, and I held him accountable. He couldn't believe I knew this. I said, let me tell you so-and-so. I said, you had this expectation that as soon as you got out of the military, you were going to be happy again. You were going to find that girlfriend finally, that you were going to get a dream job. You were going to be killing it. Everything was going to be sunshine and daisies. You got out. What did you find? That your resume from being a CS aligned with nothing, that the college process wasn't what he thought it was. He got a job as an Amazon delivery driver, then a bus driver. He was miserable. He was basically saying, at least in the military, I felt more purpose than this. Mm-hmm. And I said, you thought that getting out would just cure all your other issues. And I said, the military plays a huge factor into relationships, career, all that. Don't get me wrong, happiness, but thinking that getting out is going to be a miracle switch where a few days later you've got this dream job because I'm military. Everyone's going to want to hire me. That's not how it works, especially if your resume is like respectfully, I mean, he was a CS. I mean, what does that really say? He wanted to be a car mechanic, an auto engineer. And just saying that he was military and he lived on a ship doesn't qualify you for that, you know? Right. And I said, look, and now you're desperate. You're turning back to what you know. All you've ever known since high school was the military. So now you're like, well, maybe if I go back in, but a different branch or a different style, I can make it work this time. I know everything that I need to know. I said, look, if you knew everything and went back to high school and redid it, do you think you would be happier? Maybe, but I think you'd still be miserable, still face some of the same problems. It's like going back in just because it says it's the reserves and not active duty. It's not, that's not going to be a miracle cure either. You said the same thing about the civilian label. They're just labels. You have to take action. And it broke my heart because for 6 years, all he did was like, he wasn't one of those guys that had the countdown on his phone. I know plenty of guys that had the countdown app, but all he was talking about was like, bro, I'm so excited to get out, this and that, and all these plans. And I wanted to tell him like, it's not going to fix everything, but I knew that wasn't good for his morale because that was what he was riding on, was getting close. And then they extended him twice to stay in. So I knew I wasn't going to say anything, but finally that phone call came where I had to say it to him, and I'll say it to all the young veterans listening who feel like, what happened? Where did I go wrong? Nothing went wrong. This is just the reality of it. Getting out isn't a miracle fix. You know, some of the stuff I faced with, I realized like it wasn't just the military. You know, I didn't get out and suddenly I'm happy and great. You know, it's you have to see it, like you said, a new mission, but not one that comes with all these built-in presets of you're happy and you have a wife and a family now or whatever it may be for you. Yeah. You have to work. It's actually not just a new mission that's continuing from your old one. It's almost an entire restart, especially if you've been in for the longer you've been in, the bigger the restart is. Yeah. And it may set up a good foundation for you, but a lot of the things aren't covered by the military. Like I said, even the only thing that kind of is maybe your career if you're staying in the same field.
Sure.
But like, hey, if you're a nuclear operator getting out, trying to do anything other than that, I mean, I've been denied. When I first got out, I got denied from, actually it was funny, I was overqualified to be a waiter or to be a server or to just do something simple while I looked for something blue collar or stuff. And at the same time, they said, hey, you're a military man, so you can deliver these Amazon packages with, you know, precision, you know, attention right to detail, no wrong labels. So it's a very sad reality. But the truth is, the military isn't a free pass to a, you know, spoiled civilian life. Right. In a lot of ways, it's actually more difficult sometimes.
Yeah, and you don't get issued on your way out of the military. You don't get issued the family, the American dream job, the house with the white picket fence and all the things that you might be looking for. You don't get issued those things. You got to work for those things just like anybody else. And I think for people who like have that countdown app on their phone and they're looking forward to that date getting out. And as you were talking, I came to the realization that this coming November will be 20 years from the time that I enlisted. And
wow,
I'm kind of kicking myself right now. Like I could be this close to retirement right now.
And it's like, did I make the right decision? How long were you in for again?
I was in for 6 years.
Okay.
So it was
a long 14 years.
It would have been a long 14 years for sure. But I'm
looking back at it, you're like, well, it would have been the blink of an eye if I look back right now at 14 years.
But right now, yeah.
During it.
Oof. But I bring that up because there's always that woulda, coulda, shoulda type mentality.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, like I made the right decision because I when I got out, I needed to get out, and I wasn't going to be doing the military any favors by staying in at that point. So when
mutually beneficial.
When you get out, I think it needs to be that you're running to something as opposed to running away from something. You know, I'm going to this job, that this is a career that's going to set me up. Maybe it's not my dream job, but it's that stepping stone that's going to get me to that next step to get me closer to that dream job. Or, you know, maybe I want to live in a certain part of the country or part of the world, move someplace else. And, you know, that's what I want to go to. And that's where I'm going to. Not, man, I hate this. I hate that. I hate my first sergeant. I hate my commanding officer. I hate all these things. I hate all that. And I just want to get out of here. And then you do, you get out and you bust through the door like the Kool-Aid man. And you,
there's nothing on the other side.
Holy crap. There's nothing here. Like where was I running to? And so you really have to be running to something and not away from something. I think that's a key point.
But what I want to caution is, again, running to that something with a plan, not with just unfulfillable expectations like, oh, just because I'm a veteran or just because, or now that I'm no longer in the military, it'll be easy. Some things don't get easier. Right. And like maybe the military was impacting your ability to get in a relationship, but that doesn't mean it's a guarantee now that it's gone that you will be in one or that you'll find one, you know? And again, like, goals that you're pursuing are different from these are guaranteed expectations I've set. So I think that's so important to have. Same with the military, going in thinking I'm going to go to Hawaii and I'm going to pilot a submarine. I'm going to have the time of my life. And then you end up in Newport News, Virginia, right? So understanding that unless in the military, unless it's in writing and sign, and even then make sure it's, there's not a bunch of waivers attached that if this happens, this happens. Like, you know, if only it was, when you're transitioning into the civilian world, you sign a contract that says, all right, I'm, you know, so-and-so Mr. Whiskey, this rank, and I'm transitioning to civilian life as my new command station. And I'm going to be stationed at the white picket fence house with, you know, the mandatory wife and kids. And I'm not going to play colors at 0500 and no one in the neighborhood shall be allowed to do so. You know, it doesn't, if only it was like that, right?
Yeah. You don't get that kind of send off with the, everything laid out for you nice and easy. Yeah,
some of us don't get a send off at all.
Right. Exactly. Before we started recording, I should say, we were talking a little bit about your kind of mentorship of the future generations coming in to the military, high school age kids and things like that. Tell us kind of like some of the things that you hope to be able to impart on those younger folks. I know sometimes their minds are kind of, sometimes their minds are open, sometimes their minds are shut off to new people and new things. But what do you hope to get across to those younger folks?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it can be very difficult because I remember the nuke program, right? All of us, they gave us a speech when we got there. They said, hey, all y'all nukes, y'all were the kind of students that showed up to school, didn't work hard, got straight A pluses and called it a day. Y'all, those people, this school isn't that. This, no matter how smart you are, you're going to have to put in work. It's about 6 years of education compacted down to a year and a half. It's drinking water through a fire hose is how they describe it. You will need to humble yourselves. And the reason there's such a high failure rate is so many people were like, ah, shut up, chief. You don't know me, you know? Yeah. And then some people who faced that struggle still wouldn't let humility take over and said, you know what, chief? We had a bad quarter, but guess what? I'm still not going to study, you know, F you. And I think it's the same thing we've always talked about on my show. You need to, in order to improve yourself, you have to accept criticism, you have to acknowledge weakness, and you have to have humility and take down that ego. And so, yeah, like you mentioned, it's very difficult getting through those egos. And I wish I could, because here's the thing, Mr. DeLuzzo, if you don't, it's going to get broken one way or another by something worse, probably a mistake, a failure, or they go to the grave with a whole bunch of failures that they could have avoided, all because their ego was more important. And guess what? Your ego, when it goes into the grave, it kind of just stays there. It doesn't do anything. No one's going to talk about it years later. So, you know, I was thinking about this a lot when the high school I was speaking with said, hey, Mr. Whiskey, we want you to make a mentorship program. And we want you, specifically, they said the Navy cadet, future cadets that are in part of the, you know, Army school program. And I was like, what would I say to them? Because I don't want to paint this picture that the military is awful and discourage them, right? I mean, but the goal is to set realistic expectations. I was like, well, how do I do that? Because like I said, every military experience, every person's experience in military is so unique. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of overlaps, right? There's a lot of overlaps. There's a lot of same situations. But at the end of the day, every command is going to be different. All your coworkers are going to be different. So what are the common overlaps that I can focus on that are more generic yet helpful? And I think what I want to see is that longer term, this is a big picture, taking a step back, that I help create a third party organization, or maybe it's part of the military, that sets up mentorship for the young enlisted. And maybe that includes high school and JROTC, but specifically, if we can set up all the young enlisted to do well, to create positive command climates, to work well with one another, that's gonna, and they stay in, the retention rate just went up. If retention goes up and everyone's having a good time, morale's up, the new wave that comes in, because everything is cyclical in the military. Like every cycle, like I'll give an example. On my ship, new people showed up. They got called nubs, non-useful bodies. And I hate that, to be honest. It's very rude. Non-useful bodies. And it was by people who were there like a week or two before us too. So that's the worst part. Like now, if it was chief, senior chief, all right, you know, whatever. Some people would call it hazing. Some people call it tough love, right? But the worst part was if you were, quote, a nub, the senior rates would task you with all this additional work that was theirs to do. And it was their senior rate privilege there. I've been here a few months longer. Now you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And then those, quote, nubs would get to that position and pass it. They would copy the same, right? We see the same thing in it starts in high school. Fresh meat, freshman Friday. Let's go punch a couple freshmen in the locker room because that's what they did to us. Now it's our turn. Right. So instead of this break the cycle of abuse, we see the let's continue it. It's our turn for, you know, revenge. And so if we can break it at some point and set up young enlisted and officers as well to make that positive impact, pay it forward to the next, and then keep that up. But here's what I've seen. So caveat is that I had a shipmate who he didn't task his work to the newest recruits. He didn't treat them badly. He said, I'm going to do my responsibilities, my part. Do I have the privilege to pass it on to you because I have positional authority? I do, but it's my job. All the other senior rates said, oh, look, I guess he's still a nub. Once a nub, always a nub. And they would task him with extra work and treat him bad. And he went to his chain of command and luckily they took care of it. But like just trying to break the cycle, he got thrown into the bottom of it. Right. And so if we can preventatively, you know, preventive maintenance, one of the military's biggest things, preventative maintenance and cleaning and look busy and hurry up and wait. You know, if we can get the new generations going in or the mid generations to break that cycle and create a positive cycle and stop. And like I said, a little poison will ruin a whole vat of wine. If you can stop any new recruits who get to power and decide it's my turn and, you know, I don't like the way things are run. If you hold people accountable, you can have that. So I think starting at the high school level and specifically the young enlisted level, again, most young enlisted are 17, 18, 19, 20. They're young adults. They, you know, the education system doesn't teach you how to adult, and it certainly doesn't teach you how to live a military lifestyle. Right. And respectfully to the JROTC programs and stuff, from what I've seen, it's not the same as being in and being enlisted. And in fact, they have nicer uniforms here in Georgia than we do in the actual service. I was like, man, who's paying for these? Their uniform. They had crisp like black jackets and all these badges and pins. I was like, what is all this chest candy for? I mean, like, but anyway, the point being, that's what I hope to see mainly is, can we set up a positive cycle and can we keep it running? And, you know, we set it up so that when Mr. Whiskey and Mr. DeLuzio pass away and people just listen to their podcast daily still because they're great shows, that the new generation will have their version of it and they'll pass it down and pass it down and create a positive cycle. Because one of the issues now that we've seen, I'm sure you've seen it, is what we see is the people who stay in or the people who are the most bitter, the people who like the way things were. And we have all this leadership that just is from like 20, 30 years ago. You know, so it's on a huge lag time. Just like when you order parts or do maintenance in the military, everything is on. We're replacing stuff that's like 20 years old. And why don't we have modern computers that actually work, you know, but to each command their own.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that breaking the cycle thought process, because when you're in that cycle, it's almost like, well, this is my birthright to be able to pass the
right,
have the crap roll downhill and just pass
like
it on
entering
to
the frat club, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rite of passage.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage, pretty much. Yeah. And it's like, oh geez, I can't wait until I'm in that guy's shoes so I can pass it down to the guy below me. And it's like, I don't know, that just seems like a kind of crappy way to do things. And yeah. I think, unfortunately, it's probably going to require some tough changes coming from leadership to say, hey, look, this is your job. You do it. don't pass it on down the line the way it's always been done, because otherwise there's still going to be some of those people, you know, until you get that next group of people in who maybe have a better mindset. And
instead you hear, as long as the work gets done, as long as the work gets done.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, so again, your podcast, A Couple of Nukes, talks about, wide variety of topics, a lot of different guests that you've had on the show. Any particular guests or topics that you've talked about that really stand out, that really seem to be impactful?
Yeah, in September I had Scott DeLuzio on my podcast, and we talked about
The check's in the mail, so thanks for that
plug. Thank you. And thank you for that disability check. But I was going to say, obviously, there are some guests that I get along with better and I enjoy more, but I find it also interesting, because every guest has such a unique story. No matter how many Vietnam veterans I have on the show, they're all different stories. And one that shocked me was he went back to Vietnam a few years later and said, "All for nothing." And that just hit me in the heart, And I meet some of the coolest people. I recently did an episode on the artificial insemination scandals and fertility fraud. And that blew my mind. And then I've had, the number one survivor in America, EJ Schneider, the 6 times Naked and Afraid champion on my show. And that was a wild conversation. But then I've had people on my show who fly airplanes, people who blow airplanes up with rocket launchers. And it's just, I love being a podcaster. And, I had a young woman the other day said, "Oh, well, every young man runs a podcast." And I was a little offended. I was like, well, if you look at the statistics, only less than 48% make it to 10 episodes. Only about 4% make it to 100. So, there's a lot of people who start, but not many who stay to it. And one of the great things when people say, "Well, why do you keep doing it?" And like you and I mentioned, it's to reach that one person or and then the next person and the next. And I get to sit down almost daily with a wide range of guests. Like we've already mentioned, such a wide range internationally. I recorded with people in Ireland, India, Malaysia, America, Britain, all this stuff, Australia. And for free, pick their brains apart. Some of these people are billionaires. Some of these people are geniuses. Some of them are homeless veterans. Some of them are just your day-to-day civilian. And it's like they all have so much to offer and so much value and so much to help other people. And seeing that connection and care, which I think to tie into the military, I feel like a lot of times we feel like we're treated like an object, that we're not a person, that we don't matter. I'll never, ever forget this. A Master Chief who said, "Mr. Whiskey, I don't have to justify myself. I wear an anchor with 2 stars. I can do whatever I want." That, seeing that is just like hopelessness. And you feel trapped in the military, like you're not a person. Like community doesn't matter. None of these people actually care. They're just trying to fill a checkbox for Uncle Sam. So to podcast and see the opposite of that and to know that exists, it's so beautiful. And so I love it. Like I said, I have on my website, all my guests and episodes labeled and organized so you can find what speaks to you the most. And I have all my guests with their pictures and everything so you can find what speaks to you. But I encourage listening to podcasts. I need to listen to more because you never know what you're going to stumble upon. And you never know someone's story too. And I've had guests on my show who the only reason they're still here today is because they stumbled upon a podcast episode and it stopped them from taking their life or from becoming an addict. Or turn their life around, and this episode that we have right now together here could be doing that. Maybe not today, but it could be hundreds of years, like I said, after you and I have already passed away and people are hearing it. So I think podcasting is such a beautiful thing. And I think what makes it so beautiful are the guests and the connections between the same guest could be on 100 podcasts and every single time the same story is slightly unique and tailored to a different way. So I think that's beautiful.
It is. And I think that's, that's one of the reasons why I keep doing it, because I want to keep putting out different stories, different points of view, different ways of thinking of things. Things that you brought up today on this episode might be something that someone never thought of before on their own or never even heard put in those types of words and, kind of just turn that light bulb on for them in their head and just, maybe he's going to just help them in even a small way or a big way. Who knows? And, so I think that's pretty awesome. Before we wrap up, though, I want to give you a chance to let people know where they can find out more information about your speaking engagements and your website for the podcast and all that kind of stuff.
For sure. So that's CoupleONukes.com, CoupleONukes. And don't include that apostrophe. That's just on my branding because I'm Southern. But, you know, I highly encourage y'all to check out the website, like I said, just because even if you don't listen to my show, which please do, but if you don't, even just going through my guest catalog, it's all resources for everything you could imagine, right? Every guest that I've had on, most of them have a book or a show or a program that you may find interesting. And again, it's not always about ourselves. You know, I find podcast episodes that I send to other people. I know not everyone does that, but like I'll find something on YouTube or a podcast show and I'll send it to someone. I'll be like, hey man, you would really enjoy this or you need to hear this.
Yep.
And so I really encourage you, if it's not for you, like we said, like maybe you're not military and listening, but you care about that community or you just want to hear our stories. Like it's, doesn't have to be specifically for you. So I encourage the website, CoupleONukes.com, to tap into those resources, to check out my guests, to check out me. And if not even the show, like I said, I love networking, meeting people, seeing how I can help you out, partnering up with nonprofits or connecting you to guests on other shows. And, you know, most guests who have been on my show, I say, would you like a list of other shows that I think you'd be a great fit for? And we get to have anyone say, no, I'd hate that, you know,
right,
so
right.
It's great. Or if you want to reach out to me and say, hey, Mr. Whiskey, I am struggling with this thing. I don't like listening to podcasts, I have a low attention span, but do you know any books or guests or things that would be great for me? Like I want to, as the years go on, to build more engagement with the community and build communities, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's awesome. And so I'll put the links that you just mentioned there in the show notes. Is there any special place people can go if they're interested in getting you, you know, in their organization or school or something like that for any kind of speaking engagements, or go straight to that website?
You just send off a nuke into the sky like a bat signal and I appear. No, you, like my website has all the different ways to contact me, but that's CoupleOFNukes, so OF, CoupleOFNukes@gmail.com, because I started this all when I was young and stupid and should have just put CoupleONukes, but I thought people would be confused, but I realized the OF confuses more people. So CoupleOFNukes@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. And then all my, you know, social medias, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff is just CoupleONukes/Mr. Whiskey. Don't put just Mr. Whiskey. It'll be all liquor bottles. Don't just put CoupleONukes. Sometimes you'll get nuclear warfare. But yeah, if you put them together, guaranteed me. Awesome. Or just look up CoupleONukes. Like I said, most of my stuff will pop right up.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, again, those links will be in the show notes for the listeners. Definitely go check out the podcast. It's an awesome show. I think you'll find a lot of value in the episodes that he has over there on there. But Mr. Whiskey, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show. Really was a great conversation. I really was looking forward to this for a long time. And you know, I think we definitely helped that one person at least today. So I think we can both go to bed tonight knowing that job well done.
Hey, the reactor never sleeps, so neither do I. That's what we say.
There you go. All right. Thanks so much.